But beyond. On Wolf Spirit Radio, No Borders Radio, and everbeyond.info. Be prepared to leave your belief systems behind as we go beyond teachers, beyond gurus, beyond duality, ever beyond. March 9th, 2014. This is Ever Beyond on Wolf Spirit Radio, everbeyondradio.com, and nobodiesradio.co.uk. I was just checking out. Maybe I've got the stream. Have I got the stream? Yeah, well, welcome to No Borders Radio as well. There we go. Thank you, everybody. I'm very sorry that last week I wasn't able to come on because my internet was basically literally hanging by a single wire. It had become disconnected in the box down the road, and he put it back in and screwed it in really nice and tight. And I actually have a good broadband speed today, and everything seems much more solid and better than it was before. So thank you to Mr. BT and British Telecom, and they got the whole thing running again. My guest tonight is a new radio host on Wolf Spirit Radio. She's had much experience as a life coach with being able to bring people essentially to the place where they want to be, but they can't quite get there and they don't even know how to ask the question of. Part of the whole thing is using the intuitive faculties. So we'll see as our conversation unfolds how my guests, Ray's, are expressing throughout her life. And this is essentially what my show is all about, is about how Ray's express themselves. So I'd like to welcome Michelle Caruso. Good evening. Good afternoon. How are you?
Hi, JP. I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm very well. So whereabouts are you located?
I'm in New Jersey, about 10 minutes outside New York City.
Wow. Wow. Da, 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 da. So is it like, are you in a really densely populated area?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It takes to do about a mile drive on most days around here. It could take you about 20, 25 minutes with all the traffic. We have a lot of traffic.
Might as well walk.
Yeah, that's usually what you end up doing.
So welcome to Ever Beyond, and this is a sort of Sunday afternoon excursion into and beyond, really, the things that we talk about on the rest of the shows. I'd like to sort of go into causality and intention and, you know, the spiritual impulse behind things. So no pressure at all. We have a few topics that we had a little chat last night, and we covered a few topics, and we decided that we'd just kind of allow this thing to unfold itself with a kind of few seed ideas that we were discussing, and always with my shows and with the guests is how things are from the inside. You know, how did you experience such and such? So and it's basically, I like to talk about people's awakening and the things that lead up to it, the things that catalyze it, and the experience of it. And that's can we start there, Michelle? And you know, how did you grow up? Were you, you know, what sort of career path had you chosen or anything like that? Very, you know, sort of there came a point when things changed for you, didn't it?
Yeah, you know, well, it's really been a journey. It's been a progression. There really hasn't been any definite fine line from one thing to the next. It's just been a blend, and things happening on parallels, and so eventually the paths kind of cross and meet. I worked for about 20 years in the automotive industry, and which seems as though it would be so different from where I am now. But, you know, all the while I was, you know, just, you know, following my own path of spirituality and developing myself and, you know, gaining my self-awareness and working on mindfulness and being in the present. And, you know, in hindsight, I can see it now. I didn't really see it at the time. In hindsight, my work was contributing to my spiritual path. You know, being a female in a male-dominated industry, I learned a lot about male and female energies and how we work together, which is, you know, very important for spiritual work and to understand that. So there's always been these parallels, and they just come together in their own way.
Is that, I can hear a radio somewhere, or maybe have you got the chat room on?
You know what? I'm sorry.
Yeah. Can you just click the stop button on the radio player?
I did. You know, I thought it was you.
You thought it was me.
Yeah, sorry.
Well, isn't that telling, dear? We sound like an old couple already. Anyway, but so you had a kind of vision already that wasn't, as we call, 3D. You know, you were seeing the way things were through the vision and filter that you had already, and
yeah.
And actually taking advantage of it, you know, using it as grist to the mill. These are signs that you have the first ray somewhere, because that's what about. You know, like, okay, screw that. I'm not gonna back down. You know, you take up the challenge, no matter how long it takes you to reorient yourself to get there. And sometimes it does take a long time to get yourself, you know, free of the programming, or free enough to affect a particular next step, or something like that. So,
yeah,
you've experienced. Tell us about some of the experiences that you had with your own experience of seeing things again for the first time, and how you help others through that, because then that's the next step of the spiral.
Well, most of my life, I just really thought I was just all alone with the different difficulties and struggles that I had in life. And it was very lonely. You know, I didn't really feel that I had people to talk to and to understand. And it made it difficult. You know, I was always very sensitive to, you know, what's around me and what's going on around me. And you don't, you know, you take things on. And so I really didn't have an understanding of that. I was raised in a very strict Christian family where, I mean, life was dictated by the Bible. And all the questions I had couldn't be answered by the Bible. So I didn't have any support in that area. So I had to find my own answers, or just be miserable. And I didn't like being miserable, so I sought my answers. And eventually, and it did take, it's so true, it was a long journey, very long path before I realized that we really all have the same stuff going on. We have it to different levels, and we have different reactions to it. But I started to realize I'm really not different from other people. We all have the similar struggles with life and relationships and careers and, you know, life purpose and meaning. And once I realized that, I had to jump into that and take on a role where I can support people through, because I always liked helping people. That was always a theme in my life. And so, it, you know, going into coaching then was really the next obvious step for me, you know, so that I can continue that role of supporting people, but now in a different way, and it's more of a, you know, in an intimate way, and supporting people in their own journey and helping them, you know, discover their own answers to their questions.
So you found yourself in this male-dominated zone, and you're saying that you use the energy of that to understand how men and women work. Obviously that helps you, you know, in group work and helping people relate. Where am I going with that?
Yeah, I didn't realize it as it was going on. I actually didn't realize it till the end of my career. That, you know, the last year or two was when I started to appreciate what the industry had taught me. And so, yeah, it was really helpful because I can coach males, you know, as easily as I can coach females. And I never wanted to be that kind of coach where I can just coach one specific type of person, you know, one specific group. I want to be able to coach anybody that's looking, you know, looking within themselves and looking to gain, you know, meaning and purpose and more balance and enjoyment out of their own lives. So I didn't want those restrictions of, I only work with females, or I only work with this age group. So it was really helpful for me for that, because I got to understand the a lot of women, it's easy to bash the men, you know, because the things that some guys, you know, how they treat other, you know, treat women sometimes. And so being in that male dominated field for so long, I got to see the other end of it. You know, I got to see a lot coming from the male's perspective and realize that we're all imbalanced, you know, we're all imbalanced, and the male energy expresses its imbalance in different ways than when a female energy is imbalanced.
So do you want to talk a little bit more specific about what that is about and how you found ways of facilitating it? Because obviously, you know, if things are out of balance, they need to come back into balance. They have a natural tendency, like any pendulum, to come into balance. What's your approach?
Well, usually what's going on is there's a compensation involved. So usually why somebody's having, it's usually showing up in relationships. I mean, that's what life is all about. Work relationships, you know, romantic relationships, family relationships. So when we have, you know, our own personal balances reflect primarily through our relationships with others. So you'll see a compensation. So if somebody is not feeling secure in their masculine energy, you'll see him overcompensating for it and being overly aggressive. Not always, but, you know, that's one example. It's a common example. So, you know, a lot of the clients I've worked with are actually these, you know, the quote unquote alpha males, you know, in the executive world, and they reach a point where they're tired of, you know, being bossing people around. They're tired of being the hard guy. It doesn't feel right to them anymore, the way that they treat people and the harshness with people. And so they reach, it's usually you reach a point, for most people, I think it's starting to happen younger now, but for most people, it's usually around 35 to 40 years old or a little bit older. And you start realizing that something just doesn't feel right, and they can't really put their fingers on it. It's just, something's not right. This is how I live my life. It's worked. I'm successful. I'm this, I'm that, but I don't feel right inside. And so it's bringing them back, like you said, that swinging pendulum, it's bringing them back to that place that is more authentic to them. And it can take a lot of work because you have to start incorporating different, it's a totally different way of being now. So it's not about taking somebody like that and trying to get him to go to that opposite end of the spectrum, because that's what happens a lot when we try to blindly work on ourselves. We see something that we don't like or something that doesn't feel right, and we just jump to that other end of the spectrum. So somebody that's been very aggressive and assertive will think the way to correct it is to become more passive. And so most times it's taking approach of raising something that's weak as opposed to decreasing something that's too strong. That makes sense.
Yeah, when we're talking about healing with frequencies, we give the reciprocal frequency the opposite. So like when you have a color wheel, you just look on the opposite side of the color wheel to find the corresponding color. So and that, you know, it, rather like you're saying, rather than building up, rather than knocking something down, you build up the opposite. In that modality anyway.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the same concept, and it sounds simple, but it's really not a very common concept that you hear.
That's right. We were just discussing this in the last show with Katie, the mainstream of psychology and psychiatry and all that is Neanderthal compared with the high mind technologies that the healers are working with these days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what I found, I mean, I'm not a psychologist, but you know, as a coach and, you know, going through training and you know, educating myself as a coach, you do study a lot of psychology. And, you know, studying esoterics for so long and ancient esoterics for so long, I was amazed at how much of psychology comes out of the ancient esoteric teachings. But it's they take chunks, you know, so it's a distortion of it. So you get parts and pieces of it, and you're not going to create, in my opinion, you're not going to create a complete whole person through working with just chunks and pieces.
Yeah, it's a kind of copy and paste philosophy, isn't it?
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, and essentially that's exactly what they did. They had, these Tibetans, they dictated these dozens of books through the telepaths, and it's barely understandable, except when you meet the master. once you meet the master, everything clicks into place and you can read it like a novel. Until that time, it's veiled from you, and that's what they call blinds in the esoteric literature. So you start to see when you know you've been given the key, and we were talking last night about when you meet people that you've met in other lifetimes or in parallel lives, you know, that there's a certain package of information that gets exchanged, and it's like holding your database password, and you again got access to all of your stuff and the memories of that lifetime and the achievement of that lifetime. In my book, that they call that recapitulation, getting your head back. I kind of like that. You were describing certain events like that in your life as well, haven't you?
Yeah. There's there's different levels that it seems to happen with, and with certain people, it seems to be more intense, right? So, sometimes you meet somebody and it's that instant flood of something. And then other people, it seems to have more of a subtle kind of uphill, kind of gradual increase, and the relationship kind of deepens and strengthens over time. For other people, it's that instant flood, and sometimes it's pleasant and sometimes it's not so much.
Well, you know, again, part of this evening's conversation is the reincarnation karma cycle that seems to be spiraling spiraling into control, spiraling into, you know, forcing us to face our stuff daily and more intensely every day. I've certainly been experiencing that myself and people around me.
Yeah, and that's what, you know, I see showing up, you know, really strongly, you know, with clients also. So, and I work with clients all around the world. So it's really happening on all different levels. And it shows up as this, in a lot of ways, it shows up in that there's just this focus on it'll be a specific kind of relationship in their life, and they'll just be that focus. And it's really hard. You got to take that step back and look at it from the outside, looking in. But there's all that drama and emotion stuff caught up, and it really gets a hold of people.
Well, that drama is the thing that draws us away from the true spirituality and the true learning and healing that we're actually in relationship for. It seems to be a way of some people use it as a way of perpetuating their drama and drawing attention rather than seeing what it is that they're because attention is energy. It's like people's time, which is precious. I think it's precious.
So when I get involved in that for myself, I just really ask myself to slow down and take a step back and try to create that space in between, and it seems to kind of air out and let the emotions and the drama kind of settle down, almost like you know, the denseness of the fog kind of starts to dissipate, and you can start to see a bigger picture of what's really going on between you and the person.
Yeah, this is part of our esoteric path. It's interesting that you use that the metaphor for the fog, because the world is, like, in some ways covered in a fog, and not just the chemtrails, that's like a physical manifestation, but esoterically there's a fog that is slowly being cleared, and it's cleared around these points of truth, you know, like David Icke or someone like that. He's clearing up all the cabal's machinations, the confusion that they put out, so that we lose energy. You know, we sent around running around like headless chickens.
Mm-hmm.
Until we recapitulate the headless chickens, lock them back in, and it enables us to rejoin ourselves in a network, which, as the network starts to build up, it's like, all right. So I'm gonna go back, because I was using the metaphor earlier, and we were talking about it last night as well. Form, mm-hmm. And the idea of these wireframe geometric patterns. I started into it in the Irish radio show that I was on like 3 hours ago, and the shape of the atom is not like Saturn. It's more, and it's not even like a cloud around it. It's more like a geometric form. It's more like a tetrahedron, and then a star tetrahedron, and etc. Mm-hmm. And a cube, and an octahedron, and a dodecahedron, and an icosahedron, and all that stuff. As the atom becomes more and more energetic, and so it's. These are geometric forms within, which is why they form particularly shaped crystals. That's, you know, it's just the way the atoms have stacked together. So that is one illustration of what form means when you talk about it. It starts all the way down at the atom level. The atoms are not spheres, they're not little balls, they're little geometric forms.
Sacred geometry.
Exactly, that's where it comes from. And 12 is carbon. And when you define a musical scale according to 12, you end up with the 432 hertz scale. And 12 is a G. Interesting. Anyway, I'm not sure if you're aware of the 432 thing. I've spoken about it before on my shows, but it's a musical tuning that is more natural sounding. It's more like the old tuning before 1930s. It was slightly more slack. Anyway, meanwhile, let's come back to Michelle. I'm not sure where to take it just now. It's like you've got something going on.
I'd really like to talk about the rays.
You want to talk about the rays?
I do, because this is, we talked about last night that I'm just fascinated with the rays. And
all right. Fine, I will talk about the rays and use you as an example, as I do, yeah. Holding up to be a shining example of certain energies. So, and this is one of the reasons that I have the show. So, thank you for reminding me. So, all right.
Rays.
Okay, yeah, right. Let's cut to the chase now. Okay, yeah. Anyway. There we go. I don't know if you saw, Dolly is saying, Bunny amazes me. She counsels people and helps them, and she comes in here with us and seems to fit right in. She's a well-rounded being.
Aw, thank you, Dolly. Yeah, I love that chat room. They're a great bunch. They really are.
Wow. Yeah, they're lovely. So we've got our Ray package. This is what I suppose we agree to have. It's like we're given a bunch of clothes. Yeah, this is what you're going to be wearing during this lifetime. And some of them are like, you know, you can have like industrial clothing. Some of them could be, nice dress clothing, party clothing. There's all different kinds of clothing, all different purposes. And our energies that we incarnate with fit the purpose that we give ourselves. So if we're here to clear up karma and we need to go into, like a war zone or something like that, then we'd be given a tough physical body and a strategic form of mind, etc. We got the right programs that give us the energy. So there seems to be a group of that emanate from a group soul. That emanates from a group monad, which is, it's like a it's like a conglomerate, like a federation. It transcends boundaries of dimension as well as like location, so it's like more a hyperdimensional. Anyway, so whatever it is. It's just here to make sure that the Nazis don't take over, basically. This is what we're here for, and to observe and influence where it's possible the Nazis not taking over and losing and being dismissed from this planet. And that's why everybody's watching it. This is the whole subplot behind the whole TV series that is Earth. And so here we are, and we're playing out our little parts, but what we realize is that sometimes we realize that we're actors in a TV show. We realize that we have a particular influence in terms of the script of the show and the story arc, and that we're able to steer the show in a particular direction just through our character. And this is how we discover our lives. And with a lot of the time the Earth has been kind of shrouded in this mist, and there is a need, a necessity for this mist to be dissipated. Esoterically, in the books, they call this mist glamour. World glamour is a product of the thing that is called the astral plane, which is the invisible, near ultraviolet kind of, not ultraviolet, infrared, possibly, you know, it's like the dynamic dimension next to us, and it's where our emotions exist. And that's why they call it the emotional plane, and our emotional body exists on this plane, and the plane is stuffed full of stuff. A kind of jelly-like material that slows everything down, and it's produced by all the fear rituals. This is what we, you know, Katie and I have been talking about. It creates this stuff. And it's a icky material, and they call it ectoplasm. You know, if you travel through the astral plane, in and they found that in time travel experiments, that they came covered in this goo, like in Ghostbusters. Yeah, it's, mm-hmm. it's a real thing. This is like the conglomeration on the astral plane of people's fear and the distress. It's like an energy source. That they use, and it's just like Monsters, Inc., where, you know, people are being farmed for their energy by fear. So that's the world problem, and the world's problem solution is to call from all points of the galaxy, help stop this happening. And so there's a kind of volunteer group, in general, because of their orientation and connection with the group mind, which is of love, that they come through the Ray 1 monad group and Ray 2 soul group. And this is what people call the indigo generation, because the color of Ray 2 is indigo. And so you hear about people, the indigo children, and they're very empathic, they can feel what you're saying and all of these things. But they didn't realize that before they were defined as indigo children, they were like, you know, little lonely kids. When we grew up, I was just a little lonely kid and all that stuff. Little geeks, nerds and geeks, and all these horrible words that people had for these beautiful, loving creatures. A lot of us got very abused and, you know, dismissed. And because, you know, you don't fight in the same way, it's not aggressive, and, you know, it's just nice, you know, really, really nice. And instead of, like, pretending to be nice, you know, not nicey-nicey nice, but really nice. My friend used to say, not just nice, but really nice, which is like, you know, nice through and through, and not pretending. It's just, it's in the nature of being love. And that is true, because the nature of the soul is love, is of the Ray 2, second ray, which operates through the heart center. So anything to do with second ray will have a sense of heart to it. Although its glamours are fearfulness, for instance, and timidity and things like that, so people with second ray energy can sometimes be like very learned, but never speak to anybody because they're like really shy, so nobody ever knows. Out of that soul and monad group is expressed in different personalities. So there would be the 1-2-1, and you wouldn't see that many people around in your everyday life, but they would be some. They would go in towards politics and things like that. A 1-2-1 that I know of is Andrew Basiago, who was involved in Project Pegasus, who's running for president. So that kind of makes sense. You don't generally get 1-2-2s, because, well, you wouldn't see them, they'd be somewhere, you know, elsewhere. Probably be in an island somewhere, be so sensitive, not want to talk to anybody because they can hear people screaming in telepathy from 1,000 miles away. So, yeah. So you wouldn't get those. You get a 1, 2, 3 group, and 3 is the ray of communication and networking and code and cryptography and abstract mind and strategic thought and logistics and distribution and railways and traffic and bloodstream and flow and river and, you know, am I making sense? That's the third ray, the Holy Spirit, the movement of the world. It's the moving thing. The fourth ray group are sometimes involved in peacemaking, sometimes involved, well, peacemaking and beauty making, for instance, so artists and musicians and things like that, actors. Example of a ray 4 or 1, 2, 4 is Rowan Atkinson. You know who Rowan Atkinson is?
Yeah.
Mr. Bean. But he's so much more than Mr. Bean. Awesome person. Awesome person. He's just so compassionate that he can imitate anything. He just goes inside it. You know, he sees things and acts them from the inside. That's a show of a true empath. So there's also the fifth ray which is the ray of concrete knowledge. So these are the scientists who are investigating the science of love. And indeed, you know, Katie, my previous guest, she has she's 1, 2, 5, and so she's very much into the research of things, of understanding, and she's a physicist, you know, how the thing works, how everything works, and applying that to high energy spirituality, which is the same, you know. So spirituality in physics is all about just high energies and higher octaves and higher frequencies to those ones we come across normally. Sixth ray, 1, 2, 6 group is generally dealing with the religions of the world and would generally be perhaps leading and steering religions into a new way. If I wasn't so suspicious, I would say that Pope Francis was in that sort of in that sort of mode. But I think he might be leading people down a darker path than appears right now. But that's just because I can't trust the Pope. never have, never will.
I'm with you there on that one.
So the sixth ray is the ray of religion and devotion and loyalty and solidarity and all this like soldieriness and comradity and, you know, we all die as one and the whole revolution radio. It's also the ray of addiction and obsession and possession and weird astral stuff and demons and la-di-da-di-da-di-da-di-da. The whole dark side of the black and the red, you know, all the way down. So that's the sixth ray, and again, it governs belief systems and religion. And then we have the seventh ray, which governs manifestation and law and rhythm and magic and ceremony unseen forces, so like magnetism, for instance, is an unseen force. You can't see it, you can't smell it, but it does things, you know. Ray 7 is the ray of the new age. So we've been from the ray 6 age to the ray 7 new age, and this is all the kind of high technology, group mind understanding, group healing, group this, group that, group everything. group humanity, group mind humanity, morphological fields, neural connections. This is the internet, is the neural net of the planet.
Yeah.
You know, we're the brain, we're the mind. And esoterically, we represent the third ray, the throat center. The throat center comes through the third ray. The third ray comes through the throat center. So you can imagine that that's the communication. If you think about it, the throat center point is the point where the stuff from the head joins the stuff from the arms and the stuff from the body. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a major junction. It's a real kind of what do you call it? A hub. What's that hub? Chicago, isn't it? Chicago is the big hub there. So the third ray is very important in continuing life as it is. It's the Holy Spirit and all of that stuff. It can, on the dark side, when it's used for selfishness, it can be a little over persuasive, let's put that there, manipulative. It can sometimes be a little over verbose, you know, where one word will do, 20,000 are used, you know, you've met these people. That could be confused with fifth ray, though, because sometimes fifth ray people like to talk about something in terms of exactly what it is, rather than the common name that we have for things. Mm. So, of those we're talking about, you belong in that final bracket of the seventh ray personality. So it's the first ray of truth working through the second ray of love and working out into the seventh ray of magical order. And so the things that you do in your natural way of being is always a healing, because even in our darkest anger, secondary people can do nothing but heal. That's what they do. It's like natural beingness. And you know, you probably don't stay angry for very long, because you can't sustain a good old grudge. Like the old days.
I have to work at it.
Yeah, that's a sign of the second ray. You see, sixth ray people can hold on to a grudge for 100 years. You know, this whole all this stuff about being loyal to your clan or your country is all kind of fizzled out and gone, boiled down to a really sticky mass that is just like family feuds and hatreds, which is no good for anybody. We really need to bring that to an end. So, with the seventh ray, you're talking about the energies of rhythm and structure. Let's talk about that. Rhythm is regular, repeated use of applying force, let's say, in general, you know, and you can say that by, for instance, you can do something every week for the same for several years, for several cycles, and that kind of embeds it into a certain field around the earth they call the Akashic Records. It becomes a thing that is occurring at that time, and you know, 3 o'clock PST, I've been doing my show every week until last week. Finally gave up every week for 3.5 years, I think, or maybe more. And people come here to this time and place to witness this. I find that fascinating. So that's my expression of the seventh ray. Another expression of the seventh ray is orderliness. Which may mean that you know how to make things tidy. You know how to put things in order. And perhaps you have, for instance, if you have your own kitchen, your kitchen would have like all the jars, spice jars, exactly the same color, just appropriate labels, in a nice neat font, and you know, maybe stainless steel or brushed aluminium, or you know, that sort of clean lines and surfaces kind of life. Are we like that, Michelle?
Well, you know, it's funny. It's certain things I can see. I can't say that I'm like that. But I can say that it really sticks out that I need to incorporate that. So it's almost like I feel like I'm at a place where I'm developing into that. And I don't know if this is how the rays work, but like, you know, when you say it's the 1, 2, 7, and you said that the truth, the love, and then the get into like the order structure, of things, yeah. Right? The structure. I feel like I can look back on my life and see that there was it was necessary for truth to be focused on, and then it became love, and now it seems to be this. And I don't know if, you know, what's reflective of the seven, right? And, you know, I don't know if that's like how it works, but that's the way I can kind of relate to it for myself, or if that's the progression of it, or if the progression is different. Do we have different points in our lives where we're focused, like one ray is more prominent than the other?
Yeah. We go through Rudolf Steiner. Have you heard of Steiner?
No.
Okay. There are many people who have documented how people develop, and Steiner was one of them. And he noted that there were certain cycles, and they were cycles of 7 years, funnily enough, you know. And in each of those cycles, you develop one layer, as it were. So in the first 7 years, you develop the physical layer. In the second 7 years, up until you're 14, you develop the emotional layer. And the third 7 years, you develop the intellectual layer. So that's body, mind, spirit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, or physical, emotional, mental. That's the better way that's more the esoteric way of putting it. And that's what we call the lower vehicle. So once you get to the age of 21, you're then starting to work on the personality vehicle till you're 28, Saturn return.
Mm-hmm.
And then you then are working, bringing the soul into that in the next 7 years until you're 45, which is, 35, which is what we call the midlife crisis.
Mm-hmm.
Age of 35, boom, something happens, and this is the point where your soul comes in and says, what the heck have you been doing with my car?
Yeah.
Dude.
And it's so true.
Dude, where's the roof?
All the time.
And so once you've gone through the midlife crisis, you're then developing the monad connection. So that's 35 to 42. So once you get to 42, all the vehicles have been stacked up nicely.
Mm-hmm.
Right, but that's the theory. But it doesn't happen like that in reality, because we've got stuff.
Yeah.
And that natural development doesn't naturally happen. But it's true that every 7 years, and I this is something I read in Steiner, and he said that, you know, at the age of seven, children go through a fever, and that fever has a purpose, which is to burn off the childhood. The hood of child. Yeah? Literally burn it away. And the I'm not saying exactly on his almost his seventh birthday, my son had a fever, and I thought, aha, this is what it is. And his mother was totally freaking, oh, give him aspirin, you know, bring the temperature down, he'll die, you know. No. And so she said, okay, you look after him, you know, because we were separated by then. So she brought him around, and he went through his process. And it's a rite of passage. And you have to allow them to do that. Otherwise, they remain children.
Yeah, and so wouldn't it be the same as we're going through, you know, life through our other stages? It's they're all also in their own way, their own rites of passages, and we have to allow for the process to just unfold and occur.
That's right, the process and the progression, because it's always a spiral, it's always progressing, you know. And so there's this 7 year cycle going on there. Of course, 4 7 year cycles is a 28, which is a Saturn energy thing going on, which is like the march of time and thing, the inevitability of some things. And in a way, you know, our ascension is inevitable as well. But there is a whole bunch of people who are trying to hold as many people as they can back, and it's our job to kind of just you know, get as many people awake and aware before the moment of the event. And this, I think, is partly the energy of clearing people's minds, getting people clear, and removing all the unwanted thoughts, things that are just programs that are wasting their time. And I think that you know, that's what life coaching is, because these things waste your energy. You know, my experience. Let me just talk about myself for a little while.
Talk about me for a while.
Yeah. Meanwhile, me, right? but what I was thinking last night about. I've got a shelf, and I've got I have a fireplace, and I had a shelf in the shed, and it's the perfect size shelf, but I didn't have the brackets. So every time I looked at the fireplace, I thought, I need to put that shelf up, but I need the brackets. Okay, so that little thought requires me to go into town, which is hard because I haven't got a car, and buy some brackets. It involves me getting the screwdriver and, you know, setting up the balance and all that stuff. The whole process of putting that shelf up happens every time I look at the fireplace. And so when I finally get around to getting the brackets, it's like a great relief. I can then zip the bloody brackets up on the wall. There's the shelf, boom, 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 and away you go. But every time I think about that, I'm using the same amount of energy in my mind. That's why all these things are draining. That's why it's draining to live in a mess. As I do.
Well, yeah, because there's a, you know, we can see it too. Is it a lack of commitment, or is it a greater commitment to something else?
Well, my ex-wife used to say, a tidy house is a sign of a boring life. And my USB cable has dripped into my tea. That was not a really good place to put it.
Oh, yeah.
Which is good, actually, because I thought it was a fly at first. Yeah. And there's nothing worse than a fly. Yeah, I've got a little tea warmer, and there's nothing worse than a big old blue bottle falling into your tea.
Yeah, a USB cable will do no harm to your tea.
Dolly's saying, is JP bragging? He was thinking last night. Oh, I was thinking. I tell you, people, I've been super mind this week because I've been writing software in PHP, which is the language of these websites of making WordPress and all this stuff, and it's a real head nip. And I need to clear away all other forms of data, all relationship data. I can't talk about staff. Can't talk about anything. I have to hold the whole thing, swap it into my mind. It's like having to put in a whole other hard drive and operating system in order to do this. And then I have to spend like 4 or 5 days on it in order to do the job. And it's really, really antisocial. And I've been trying to explain it to people, but it just turns me into a really grumpy bugger. So that's why. So I'm very sorry, people, if I'm particularly grumpy when I'm writing software, but it's just I'm not there. JP is somewhere else. He's on holiday. He's taking a R&R somewhere in the Area 51. So where were we?
The brackets in your shelf.
The shelf and the thinking of, you know, all the things that we haven't done.
Yeah.
Fill our minds and they take our energy.
Yeah.
And I keep on thinking of things to do. So I'm completely, you know, I'm no master or teacher. This is why I say, you know, like on the beginning of the show, you know, let go of any ideas about teachers or healers or, you know, or gurus or anything. You know, we're just a bunch of people working things out and sharing information that we have.
Well, it's hard, right? It's hard to look at yourself and see, and we have these little, you know, sometimes we can see our patterns and they're very obvious and we can see, okay, this is a clear thing I need to work on and to do this. But sometimes, especially when they're subtle, with like what you're talking about, these little things that you have to do, a bracket and a shelf, and I'm sure it's many little things like that. And so what is that really all about? What is going on with it? But, and you, each one looks so innocent, but when, like you said, each time you're thinking of it, you're giving it energy to something that's not even happening. So if you were able to tally up all those little units of energy in a week or a month, how much would they be? And then will it take on a different form to it? Will it suddenly become more important or more of a priority?
That's right. And it's these are the little things that we, these are some of the ways that our energy is drained from us. Like, we're bombarded with all these ideas. Oh, you want to buy this thing, you know, buy these cigarettes, you know, buy this thing. Eventually all the really important things get buried. We're constantly distracted as to what we want.
And that
sucks our energy away. You know, we're not connected anymore with what we really want, which is, you know, live in a nice house, grow some vegetables and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. And that's what, you know, that you said the word distraction, and this is what happens so much when we're conversing. I love it. You know, that's what the word that was in my head was, it's just distractions. We create these distractions for ourselves, and it takes us away from what's really important, what really matters. You know, how much does the shelf really matter? How important is it?
Yeah, well, actually, sometimes it is, because, you know, there are things hanging around waiting to go up on the shelf, you know. I know. But, yeah, we're gonna go to a break right now, and you just said the word, so it's just come straight to my mind. This is a band called 07. I don't know if you know them. They're really chilled. This is called Distractions, and it's kind of very appropriate. And welcome back to Ever Beyond on Wolf Spirit Radio. My guest tonight, Michelle Caruso. Hey, are you any relation to that singer, Caruso, Enrico Caruso?
No, I'm not. Oh. Sorry.
Well, there's that one. Anyway.
And thank you for not asking Robinson Caruso, because it was Robinson Crusoe.
Oh, really?
So that's what I heard my whole life. Oh, you're related to Robinson Caruso.
Oh, no.
That's the name, right?
Not Tom Cruise.
No, not Tom Cruise.
Yeah, anyway, so... meanwhile, where were we? Distractions. That was what the cue was, and the pin, that we're distracted from delving into the appropriate rabbit hole, which is the one that we're always warned against. You know, if you're in the religions, or don't let other people tell you things about philosophy, because we know everything, and they're all wrong. And that happens a lot in the world, apparently. That sort of spiel that goes on, and I think that might be one of the problems, because I like to think that everybody's kind of mostly right. Everybody's got their perspective, and everybody's got their filter. So let's talk about your perspective when you approach clients, when you approach life, when you approach your own issues. There's a problem-solving perspective that you've developed. Could you speak to that?
Yeah, it's, you know, and that's what I like, why falling into coaching was so easy for me, because it was a role that I could take on professionally that didn't contradict the way I lived my life. And that was a big reason why I had to get out of the automotive industry, because I felt I had to be a different person to survive in that. It's a very volatile, it's a very aggressive, it's a very me atmosphere. And so I felt that, you know, that contradiction just in myself. I didn't feel authentic in myself, whether I was outside of work or inside of work, because I knew that part of the day I was fitting into a certain role, and the other part of the day I was trying to, you know, I thought I was being myself when I was outside work, but it would get blurred, and then I would really question, you know. So I had to give it a lot of reflection, and the automotive industry definitely was where it was off for me, because, and it was really because of that whole me attitude that goes on there. And it's, you know, I always rejected the savior theory, philosophy. I didn't feel that I was supposed to be saved. I didn't feel that, and I mean, my whole life, I didn't feel that I was here waiting for somebody to come and save me. And so when I got really committed to finding my own spiritual answers and my own spiritual way, I took a path that was very focused on holding myself accountable and holding myself responsible for my life. And kind of what I mentioned a little bit earlier before, one of the things that we do in life when we reject one way, we flip to this other extreme. And it took me a long time to realize that I had done that. I went from the rejecting the, you know, I'm a victim, I'm here, you know, waiting to be saved thing, to I'm this independent and I need no one thing, and I'm responsible for my life. And it would take a long time before I would realize that, yes, we have to be accountable for ourselves, and we have to take responsibility for ourselves, and we have to take ownership for ourselves, and I was very firm in that. But I started to become aware that we're also here to support each other. And it's not about one person saving another. It's not about a teacher or a guru coming along and saving you and providing you with all the answers. It's about maybe somebody knows something that you haven't heard yet or introduces you to something. But we're all equals, and we're all here to support one another. And I think a big turning point when I kind of woke up to that was about 4 or 5 years ago. I started working with the spiritual teacher I work with now. And she had posed a question. She said, if a teenage boy was to walk into a deli and hold up the deli, the person behind the counter, and rob them for their money, who's responsible? Whose fault is that? And, you know, I was very quick to say, hey, that's, you know, that's that kid's fault. Those, you know, he made that choice to do that. He's responsible for that. And she challenged me with, you know, that it's the community. It's everybody's fault. Because, and it took me a long time to really get that. And, but it really stuck in my head, even though like my initial, even after she had said it to me, I still rejected it. And, but I really pondered it for a long time, and I started to shift my perspective that just because I'm responsible for me and you're responsible for you doesn't mean that we don't help each other. It doesn't mean that we don't support each other. And that's a lot of what I see happening also. And, so it's, and you can find it in both spectrums. You know, if you're of the perspective that you're, you know, we're going to be saved by somebody, you're going to be less inclined to help somebody else that needs help, because you can say you believe that that person's going to be saved by the same person that's going to save you. So you don't need to help that person. And then the same thing is where we're so focused on, you know, I take care of myself and I'm responsible for myself. And I take accountability for myself and my decisions and choices and expect everybody else to do that. You can also fall into that place where you're not being of support to other people. And I don't, and that's, so that's really what my perspective is. My perspective is that, yes, we're all accountable, we should all hold ourselves accountable, but in a way that's supportive of the rest of humanity. And if, when you hold yourself accountable, and you do it with compassion for yourself and respect for yourself, you can stay at a place where you can help somebody else without becoming a doormat. You know, I think that's a lot of things people are afraid of, helping others. We don't want to become a doormat. We don't want to be used, because people have a tendency to do this. We have imbalanced people all around us, and whether they mean well or they don't, they can, take advantage of us. So, and we want to, you know, we don't want that to happen to ourselves. And so a lot of people find the answer to that is to just not help. Don't put yourself out there, and then you're not put into that position, and you don't have to worry about it. But I did have that, you know, that thought process for a while, and it feels better to me to know that if I know that I'm here to support other people, and it's not in a way that I'm anything different than anybody else. I believe we're all here for that reason. And if I have a fear about that, then that's something that's within me. And then that's where I have to go within and hold myself accountable to that fear and work through that fear so that I can be in service to others.
How do you mean hold yourself accountable, Michelle?
Well, usually it's, you know, and talking about dealing with others where we have fears or reservations about, you know, making ourselves vulnerable to somebody else. Cause that's usually what we're doing. We're helping somebody else. There's a level of vulnerability that we're, you know, expressing to do that. So if I'm feeling apprehensive about that, it's that there's something that I'm repressing. There's an emotional wound somewhere that I haven't really resolved. I'm holding on to something from a past experience that maybe I didn't handle in the best way, and I got hurt. I didn't understand what was going on or whatever reason, but it's like an old emotional wound, and that's usually what they are. You know, that gets into the way, and so
Michelle, we lost you just a bit there. I mean, you're probably going to go bloop bloop in a second. Are you still there?
I have the red bar.
Broke up badly there. So,
am I back?
Yeah, that's better. Yeah. I don't know, you're dancing around the house.
Nope, I'm sitting on spot.
good. So what you were just saying about the how does it work? We lost the last part of that. You know, like what's the where were we?
About holding yourself accountable.
Yeah, holding yourself accountable. Yeah. How does that feel to yourself, and what does it look like?
Well, what it looks like is it's either something about myself that is underdeveloped, or there's a hurt, there's a pain within me that needs to be healed. And
oh, we lost you again.
Maybe if you hang up on me and call me back.
Okay, I'll just call you back any second, so we'll just do that straight away and see if we can get another line by calling at a random point in space and time. And we are back. So how are you doing now?
How do I sound now?
Ah, that's better. No, much cleaner. Okay. So, yeah.
Yeah,
so,
you're perfect.
Once again, what does it feel like? What does it look like? What does it smell like to experience holding yourself to account? So, because it sounds very, you know, like the final trial, you know, and that sort of thing. But it doesn't have to be so so negative sounding, does it?
No, and it's just being honest with myself that, I believe that when I'm at my best, that I'm able to be of support to others. And so if I'm having difficulty being of a support to somebody for a specific reason or a specific person, then it's telling me that there's something that needs attention from me, because I am equipped spiritually. I'm equipped to do that. We all are. We're all equipped to be there for each other unconditionally and absolutely. You know, again, this is my belief. And so when I'm unable to provide a support to somebody, then it's a flag for me that something needs to be looked at within me. And, you know, sometimes it's a weakness. It's something that's underdeveloped. It's a new area for me to grow into. Oftentimes it's an old emotional wound. It's an old experience that I didn't really process through the emotions of, and I've suppressed some of it, and it's being triggered again. And it's causing fear to come up. It's causing hesitancy. So it's a matter of, you know, and usually when it's that, it's that emotional old wound, you know, really all that's really required is just that I face it and have honesty with it. It's really not a big fancy healing process. You know, oftentimes it's a wound because it was suppressed. So it just needs to be acknowledged. It never was before. And
actually that's not necessarily a painful process. Sometimes there are tears released, but it's often a feeling of reconnection. Of integration. And it's sometimes something that we fear to do, and it may be part of the programming that is put there that we're supposed to be scared of the biggest thing. This is why people say face your fears, because that's where your release happens.
Yeah, you know, it's a shadow. You know, there's, you know, Carl Jung does, you know, there's the whole work on shadow work. You know, I just look at those as their shadows. That's too. Sorry, I don't know what's going on here.
Sorry, that just dropped. We're back now. You were just about to say shadows.
Yeah, it's just a shadow, you know, and that's to me it's just part of the, you know, it's something in the dark. It's something that we're not seeing, and we live in a society where the unknown is fearful. You know, we're brought up to plan our lives out. Know what's ahead of you. You know, be ahead of everything. Be aware of what you're moving into. Don't move into things blindly. Well, that works with certain things, but when we're talking about our own development and our own awareness and expanding ourselves outside of our comfort zone, that's not going to work because, you know, that's the whole thing is you're moving into something that is unseen to you before. And that's the part that's scary. And once you make it past that point, which it's really, it's really not a bad place to be. And there's a tremendous amount of fear around it. And especially if it's something from old, from our past, even in the coaching community, you know, a lot of coaches, they hear me talk about this stuff and they say, you know, that's, you know, that's not coaching, you know, that's, you can take, you know, work with somebody with something that's coming up and that can, you know, get them into a really negative state. They can get really depressed and they can get this bad emotion and that bad emotion. And it's like, you know, when you go into it, when it's something that's coming up for you in the present and you go into it with open eyes and you go into it with having compassion for yourself and care for yourself and doing it for the right intent of just wanting to heal yourself or to grow, whatever, you know, your intent is there with it. I've never seen anybody ever get lost in it. I've never seen anybody go into this place of depression and not be able to come out. But it's like we have that fear that if we start looking at, you know, things that upset us, things that make us fearful, that it's going to be like a black hole sucking us into something. And it's been my experience that it's the opposite, that depression and all those really low energy places that make us feel stuck and paralyzed come from suppressing and ignoring and avoiding. You know, it's coming from the opposite. That's why I think so many people are on antidepressants these days.
Yeah. It's creating an overlay over the overlay where we're trying to destroy the first overlay. You know, they're putting another one on top. And so the people don't see reality as it is. And, you know, experience the here and now, because the distractions of all the other things, you know. Excuse me. Popping my backpack into place.
What are you doing over there?
So where were we? I've been looking in the chat room. It's very lively tonight. It's very good. You know, we're getting lots of.
It's like the rainbow room. I just see lots of colors.
Yeah, it's lovely. I really like the new use of color here. It's very nice, and everybody's giving their, because that's the rays as well. You know, mm-hmm. So let's just talk about the colors now. I'm a bit reticent to talk to colors because I'm colorblind, and so what I see is probably not what you see. So it's got like, you know, I don't see green the same way that everybody else sees green. But when we're talking about the colors of the rays, we're not talking exactly about visible light. And so colors behave differently in different wave bands, and what you might name as one color might not be the color that, how can I say this? Sometimes it's like, if you see on a photographic negative, you remember the old, before digital cameras, you had a negative, and if it was blue on the negative, it came out yellow on the positive. And sometimes the colors of rays are like that. it's like the inverse phase of the higher octave. It's like, right, we see colors, we see red to green to blue, right? And beyond that is what we call ultraviolet light, which is invisible to us, but it's still red to green to blue in the next octave up. And it is an octave, it's just the same as music. And so on. So there are reds in all spectrums. And when we get down to music, the note of C corresponds to the red, and that corresponds to the first ray. But what's interesting is that it's not perceived as red on every frequency. You know, in ultraviolet, it's expressed as ultra red. You know, which is in the next octave above visible light, red is not red anymore. It's magenta. It's like a higher energy form of red. And then it just continues that like that. So the first ray is this red color, and it's like the major triad is the three primary colors. So you have the red, the green, the blue, and then you have the ray one, the ray two, ray three. So ray two corresponds to the blue ray, or the indigo ray. Ray three corresponds to the green ray, or the yellow ray. And that's the third ray. So the law of correspondences is an is something I've mentioned many times, which is if there's seven of something and seven of something else, they have a relationship. And if there's 12 of something and 12 of something else, and if there's 3 of something and 3 of something else, then they will always correspond in that way. So if you get 3 people together, one will take the first ray position, one will take the second ray position, one will take the third ray position. Several esoteric books have been written about these things, I'm sure, at different points. But I think, Errol Wiener wrote a piece about the... about the rays in the Fintorn Foundation and how they worked out, you know. So the red ray can translate at certain points to bright white light, and it's like the source ray, and then everything else comes out from that. So the second ray and the third ray appear as prismatic diffractions of the first pure ray. Or the first red ray, you know, because things have split infinitely. So we're infinite. We're at some point in the branch of a tree of a branch of a tree of a branch of a tree. The universe keeps going. It keeps going on and getting bigger and bigger and smaller and all these different continuums that meet in what we call the present time. When we're talking about planets also have personality. Everything has a personality and a soul and a monad, which is like all that is, God force, the spark in us. So there are 3 groups of monads on this planet, and they're the ones that result from the first ray, the second ray, and the third ray. So far, I haven't found anybody who's like none of them in terms of monad. So it's the one in the three, and the three in the one, the Holy Trinity, the holy unity. The monad is like this higher triangle of beingness, like the it's the higher mind to the soul, if you like.
So you're saying you haven't seen anybody with the monad number from 4 to 7?
That's right. It's a primary thing, so it's only primary rays, which means there's only 3 of them. Like colors. Mm-hmm. You see? It's just like colors. It's just like music. The primary triad is the primary chord of colors. That's the way it goes. And, and physics agrees and geometry agrees. And so it's a fractal... reality understanding. You know, you understand that everything is a pattern. You just have to realize that there is a pattern to everything, and you just need to apply where does that pattern fit? At what point does that pattern fit? I could use the analogy if I take a piece of music and take a melody, no matter what melody it is, it's possible to find a scale that melody fits into. And it might be some rare Middle Eastern melody that's got like 4 semitones in a row, but there's a scale that fits it, and there's a key to understanding it. You don't just play notes. You play notes within a scale. It's a framework. You have a color scheme. If you made if you painted a room with all the different colors of the rainbow, it would look weird. You take a small group and you make a chord. You use a maximum number of colors to paint a room in order for it to look normal, really.
So what do you, how do you approach with the working with the colors? Is it something that you feel is helpful in the beginning when you're studying the rays, or is it?
I find it a little distracting. Mm-hmm. All right, but it's very useful to use it in terms of analogy, mm-hmm. in the way that you can transform the relationship between sound, music, and color, that they correspond with each other, and that they're all about frequency. that they can then extend that analogy, and that's what the rays are, is the extension of that meta reality of the fact that there are seven colors and there are seven notes, and there are 12 colors and there are 12 notes, and there are three colors and there are three notes. You know, it's all a matter of how you've how deeply you're going into it, because everything divides down again. Every time you look at something, you can see that it itself is made up of several parts that have a pattern that seem to reflect the pattern of the whole.
I asked you that because and this is where I feel like little things come up with us that I just really connect and resonate with. But years ago I started seeing auras and, you know, colors and energy, and that's what I found after a while. It was just very distracting. And what you were describing, that there's different yellows, there's different reds, and it became very much like overwhelming trying to identify the different colors, because there's a point where they're not colors that we can really relate to in the 3D world. And that's what I got to a point where, my intuition, my inner wisdom, whatever you want to call it, you know, just said, just forget about the colors and just feel, you know, and feel through them. And it was funny because as I did that, I actually started seeing the colors less and less. And as the colors started to dissipate and not be so prominent, I felt I was gaining. That's when my understanding of the energy itself began to grow.
So what that is that you're moving from one band of frequency to another. For instance, you move from visible light to ultraviolet light, or down to infrared light. You're going from one band to another. So you're tuning up your perspective in a way. You're going like from visible to ultraviolet light, and you're seeing beyond the visible. And frequency, as in freak wincy. That we're seeing that you're able to retune, and with that retuning, you may have a better discernment, because the equipment that you use to discern one thing may not be bringing in a clear picture, because mm-hmm. it's out of band. It's like it's the right, the aerial's the wrong length, and it's not tuned into the right frequency. So, you know, it might be better to say listen to it in terms of sound, so you can hear it as notes, which are easier to discern between, or feelings, which give rise to certain images, which are easier. And I think that's what the tarot is.
Yeah, and I think that the colors can get a little distraction because of what colors are in the 3D world and how we use them. And when we start working with energies, focusing on the colors, we are working with energy then in a 3D kind of way. Mm. And then that really doesn't all jive.
Yeah, it's the thing is, it's things that are taken literally.
Yeah.
And to understand that the literal is a springboard for the higher mind to take up, and to see that within that literal phrase is a formula for understanding a wisdom about it.
Mm-hmm.
Whoa, who said that? I don't know.
Poetry again.
Oh wow. So excellent. 4:33. So yeah, we're coming up to the last half hour. So with the monad groups, which is what we're talking about, there are three kind of basic purposes. One is power that we express as truth, because it's spiritual power, mm-hmm. And it's the only spiritual power that we have, really, unless we want to bring down bolts of lightning from the heavens. But the best thing is just to be able to stand in the light of truth. And I really literally experienced that. One day I felt like a beam of light was shining on me, and I was saying things that I'd never have the courage to say normally. And it was all very funny, and it was great. But to stand and express truth, even though everything around you is in destruction and lies and chaos, and this is part of the... It's like you can't change it. You can't change the color of a beam of light. It shines on it and it just shines. That's it. You can't change its frequency. It's just there as it is. And that's how we are. And just doing stuff like this, like just having a conversation and saying, this is what I think and this is what you think, and that's interesting. Isn't that interesting that we feel and think the same thing even though we've never met before? You know, and this is, keeps happening. And this is part of the growth of the network. Of the solving of the big problem, which once we've solved it isn't a problem anymore.
It sounds kind of easy when you put it that way.
It is. It's a matter of thinking in the right way. It's like you take yourself out of the drama world, strip it down and see the form within the drama. Okay, so here's an example, and using the concept of form, right? Because this is a seventh ray thing, and if you can see, if you can say, watch a whole load of movies, and then realize that once you've got that, each movie is actually telling the same story. Mm-hmm. When you've gotten to that point, when you understand, oh, this is the point in that story, and this is that point in that story, and here's the denouement, and there's the revelation, and you know, there's a book by Joseph Campbell called The Hero's Journey. I haven't read it yet, but it's about that, and it's about all the different stages in the one story that is everybody's story, that is the story of the universe, and that is the story of every film. And once you get to see in your own personal dramas what is going on in those terms in your own life, that's when you've gotten to that level of consciousness. And that's how you solve problems, by raising your level of consciousness, by seeing, I'm behaving in this pattern. There's a name for this. There's a name for the thing that I'm doing, you know, whatever it might be. And then that name is what we call a term. So when we understand it, we've come to terms.
Yeah, and you know what's coming up for me is it seems that phase that follows that for many people is that phase of you get a little self-righteous, because you start, after that point, you start seeing everybody else's story. Right?
So what happens next? How have you dealt with this?
And this is where the way that I learned is to deal with it through compassion, because even though we may see that somebody else is telling, they're just telling a story and they don't see their underlying plot playing out day in and day out, it's always easier to see somebody else's stuff, right, than our own anyway. It's to
very
having
much,
that.
Very much. I mean, it's like you can't see your own butt either.
Right. I just got that Spaceball movie in my head. Did you see that where his butt was turned around? Never mind.
Oh, man.
So it's, yeah, so then we start wanting to pick out other people's stories, you know, and that's another way of distracting us from looking at our own story that we're telling over and over. And, so we can do it. It's like there's two points that we get kind of susceptible to that. There's a point before we look at everybody else and what's going on with everybody else and what they're doing wrong and what they could be doing better and the solutions to all their problems before we get to that place, you know, with ourselves. And then when you reach that point for yourself where you start being able to see your own story with more ease, it's a very common thing. There's actually certain books that will actually, you know, warn you. It's like in writing, like, this is the next step, you know, in developing, when you start developing your self-awareness and developing yourself, they warn you of to not get that righteous thing with other people and start trying to point out everybody else's story too. And you avoid falling into that trap, because that's the quickest way to alienate people, by the way, is pointing out their story to them. Yeah. And you don't want to do that to people unless you want to drive them miles away. And so it's just having compassion that, you know, we do get caught up in those dramas. And, you know, we all do. We get caught up in them. And to not be so quick to pick them out. And if you're picking out somebody else's drama really easy, it's also a really good indication that that's exactly what you're doing, and you're avoiding it. So you'll see it in other people.
So the more you blame, the more you need to... Well, it's going back to that energy of... Maybe this is a... You know what I was saying before about, like, the putting up of the shelf takes, every time you think about it, takes a little bit of energy away. That perhaps that's what denial is all about, is being able to somehow put that in a box and keep it away so it doesn't bother you consciously. But sadly, it gets locked away, and you're still acting out these energies. Even though you're not thinking about them consciously, they're coming out of your body.
Yeah. Yeah, I have there's somebody I know, and they were complaining about something, and it's somebody that's close to me, so it's not a client or anything like that, and they were complaining about the spouse's actions. They've been married a long time, you know, they're in their 60s, whatever. And this is something, you know, the spouse has done pretty much all through their long, lengthy marriage. And every now and then this is a problem for her. And she gets on, you know, they get into fights about it. And she, you know, complains to other people about it. And so one day, you know, I kind of took her through a little bit of coaching dialogue through it. And you know, she asked me, you know, how do I get him to stop doing this? You know, and I said, well...
get him to stop. Right. Okay, thank you.
How do I make this man? I've been married to him for decades, and so you need to tell me how to make him to stop do this. And so it's like, okay, well, it doesn't work that way, and I don't work that way. But I can help you with your end of it. And she was like, all right, you know, I'll be open-minded. And she wasn't very thrilled about it. And we went through about a half hour, 40 minutes of conversation, and her role in the story revealed itself. She saw it. She was able to, you know, let it come up organically, and she saw how she was participating in this story playing out over all these years in her marriage. And she looks at me and she said, well, I don't want to change. And it was awesome, because it was so honest. And I was like, well, you don't have to, but at least you know what it is. You have your answer now. What you do with it at that point, you know, who cares? And I knew that she didn't want to change, because you can see the wheels turn in her brain. She didn't want it. She looked at this was going to be work.
It would cost too much.
Right, right. And I would say this is about a year ago, and I was thinking about it recently. This scenario doesn't play out in her marriage anymore. And it all changed just because she became aware of it. She did nothing beyond that. There was nothing to do beyond that, but just to gain the awareness that this was what she was doing. and we distract ourselves. And I guess I'm kind of, you know, leading it back into what we were talking about earlier about going into the shadows. And so I hope I didn't digress here or anything, but.
Oh, no, no, this is perfect, because that's what we talk about on Ever Beyond. We go into the shadows to find out that we're really actually just hiding there.
Yeah. And that's, you know, it's, so that's what it is. It's just looking at, you know, what are we seeing in somebody else? And then that can shed light to for ourselves. And that's it. It's not some big, scary place unless we make it to be. Unless we create a story around it that makes it be. Because all of this, really, when you get down to it, is pretty simple. And that's been a common theme that I've experienced throughout my life and throughout my journey. Every time I've gotten something, quote unquote, it's like, my gosh, did it really take me that long? This is so simple. You know, it's like, it was so basic. It wasn't complicated. Those, but processes made it complicated.
Yeah, because that's the maze that we find ourselves in. Because mm-hmm. when you see the maze from above, you can think, oh, right, you can just turn left. But you can't see it from, all you just see is walls and corners.
Yeah.
So it's changing the perspective. And life is the initiation process, and life itself, as we go through those cycles, is the process of awakening to a bigger story every time. And, you know, when we're children, it's a very simple story. And as we go through life, the story seems to get more and more complex and more dark until we're finally prepared for the ultimate darkness, and then we die. But it would be nice to not do that and just get into it while we're here and enjoy it, you know, learn to ride it. Like, you know, in November I got this thing, you know, all these things happen at the same time. My roof was leaking, I got rats, I got sewage, and I got smoke, and my website crashed, and in one day. And I just kind of looked up and I said, you're just kidding me. You're joking. You're taking the mic. I didn't say taking the mic. But anyway, it was so unreal that I realized how unreal life was. And some things I needed, they were there to teach me that I needed to ask someone to help. Because, you know, I'm quite independent. I don't like other people doing things for me and, you know, interfering in my life, because I've got my evolutionary process to go to do, to happen, to whatever. Cultivate, that's the word, cultivate. It's like a garden. And I'm learning how to garden and do all these things. And I'm helped quite a bit by Wolf Baby. She's a gift, definitely. Thank you. There have been some times when I've learned a lot from her on lots of levels, and she's helped me plant my garden on lots of levels. So
I love that metaphor of it. You know, it's just creating the garden. And we get our seeds from different places. Sometimes it's a helping hand. Sometimes, you know, we go out and dig up our own seeds. And, you know, so, but it is, it's just, I love it, because it really does emphasize that to make it fun and make it interesting, it doesn't have to be so heavy and so complicated. And, difficult, you know, we really do. We just make it that way. And not to say that there isn't challenges, there definitely is, but we really do have a good knack. And I mean, we as humans collectively, we have a really good knack at just making things far more complicated than they really need to be. And we don't realize that there's actually a garden growing.
Yeah, and all we need to do is mow the lawn and we can find your way out. And you know, weeds. Even Master Jesus, he talked about the you know, the weeds, and pulling the weeds out from the good stuff, and cultivating, and the rain falls on both of them, and so they both grow, and all these different metaphors. Good stuff.
Yeah.
So we're coming up to about 5 minutes away from the end of the show, and I'd like you to kind of let people know, number one, how they can find you, can they book a session, how you can help them in their life, and to overcome some of the blocks that they have, if you've got a website or a blog or email address or anything you'd like.
Cool, thank you. My website is www.infinitylifedesigns.com. And I have all different types of packaging. I work out with sessions, but the first session is always free. And it's about an hour. And it's very relaxed, very, it's a non-judgmental place. I take it very serious to provide a safe place for people to come and truly express yourself, because that is what I feel is the greatest healing we can ever give ourselves, is the ability to be expressed. And so that is something that's very important to me. And my email is michelle.caruso06@gmail.com. And yeah, so between those and Skype is michelle.caruso and the number 9.
Number nine. Sorry. So was that michelle9.caruso? No. I'm completely confused.
Michelle.caruso and then the number 9.
All right. Michelle.caruso 9. Right. But not 9 as in German 9.
No. 9 as in 1 plus 8.
18. Which is interesting, because we're both 18 babies, and so is Wolf Baby, actually. All born on the 18th of the month. And with that, I'd like to just play, just after the show, I'm going to play a track that features a dear friend of ours, Amanda. She lives in the south of England. She's got this beautiful, silky voice, and it's called My Shadow Steps, and it's a very appropriate tune. Thank you very much, Michelle. And you have a radio show, don't you, on a certain station, don't you?
Yes.
Talk about that.
Well, Spirit Radio, Designing Your Life, and that's what I'm attempting to do, is, you know, share these different things that we all express, and, you know, be there as a support for others, and sharing of ideas, and just getting through this crazy life.
This right? Crazy life. So
crazy, messy life.
So thank you very much, Michelle. We'll tune in. So it's very early in the morning in America, which is like just in the afternoon here. It's quite nice. 4 o'clock in the afternoon on a Friday, starting off the Wolf Spirit Friday run, Venus Magic all the way through. So we've got your show, and then I'm sorry,
Tracy follows.
That's right. And then there's Rebecca follows that, and then Crystal Clark on the end of that. So it's a Venus Friday, this is the alternative Sunday service. We do teachings and meditations and healings, and I'd like to thank you very much. So
thank you so much, JP. It's a pleasure.
Bless your heart. Thank you, night. Good night now.
Good night.
Beyond.